You're listening to Vatican Radio. In 10 days' time, a historic meeting of leaders of the world's Orthodox churches is due to begin on the Greek island of Crete. More than 350 bishops are expected to participate in the Holy and Great Council of the Orthodox Church, as it's called, which will be chaired by the spiritual leader of the Orthodox world, Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew of Constantinople. Preparations have been in the works for several decades, but have intensified over recent months as Patriarch Bartholomew sought consensus on key documents from the 14 self-governing or autocephalous local Orthodox churches. It has been an uphill and difficult task, requiring delicate balances of interest, compromises and concessions. Yet even over the past few days, several Orthodox leaders have threatened to withdraw from the eight-day encounter. Professor George Demokopoulos is co-director of the Orthodox Christian Studies Centre at Fordham University in the United States. He spoke to Nicholas Papachristou about the difficult process of preparing for this council and the way it may help strengthen relations with other Christians, including the Catholic Church.
One of the real historical differences between the modern Orthodox Church and the medieval Orthodox Church is, quite frankly, in the medieval world, there was an emperor. And so if you had autocephalous churches where the leaders did not necessarily get along or took different points of view, those leaders were still forced to come to councils by order of an emperor. In the modern world, because there is no imperial structure, if a church or a cluster of autocephalous churches do not want to be involved, they simply cannot attend, and there is no external or supervisory body to force them to attend. So the only way that the Ecumenical Patriarch could gather the support he needed for this meeting was to make a series of concessions. The first concession that he agreed to make was that nothing would occur at this synod that did not have a consensus approach of all 14 autocephalous churches. That is actually not a historical practice of the church, that you wouldn't hold a council unless everybody agreed. There's no real historical precedent for that. That's not to say that it's wrong. It's just to say that that approach has never been taken before because you didn't need it when you had an emperor. So that's one concession. And the implication of that is that because any one of the 14 churches could essentially veto any one of the documents, it meant, in effect, that each of the documents is rather lukewarm. None of the documents are really offering prophetic or profound statements about Orthodox positions in the modern world, because by definition, they are all statements of consensus that every single one approves of and agrees with. It could be a good thing for the church to work in this way. I mean, you certainly don't want a scenario where something happens at this council or at a future council that cause further schisms. And so it may well be that in a post-imperial structure, the best way forward for the church and for pan-Orthodox unity is this consensus model.
What is your point of view in the sense how much helpful will be the pan-Orthodox council in the sense of the relations with other Christian churches, for example, with the Roman Catholic Church?
So I would say that before the Orthodox Church can really move forward in any profound way with other Christian churches, whether it's the Roman Catholics or the non-Chalcedonians, the Copts, the Armenians, what have you, there has to be a greater consensus within the 14 autocephalous churches than currently exists. Because as we know, throughout the 20th century, when one patriarch says something positive in terms of moving forward with the Roman Catholics, a different patriarch to try to build a different kind of constituency will withdraw. And so for anything to really positively happen going forward, it requires greater pan-Orthodox unity and greater pan-Orthodox vision than currently exists. And so this council has the potential to lead to greater combined efforts with especially the Oriental churches as well as the Roman Catholic Church. I think that there are certain fringe groups in Greece and in other traditions that really fear this because they have staked their entire identity on not being Roman Catholic. For these fringe groups, what it means to be Orthodox is to not be Catholic, to not be Oriental, to not be whatever, which is very much out of step with the historical tradition of how one defines what it means to be Orthodox. They're a very small group, but they're a very vocal group. And so they have really latched on to this document, the one you mentioned, Relations of the Orthodox Church in the Ecumenical Movement. And they've latched on to this, and they're very fearful that a greater consensus among the 14 autocephalous churches with regard to the value of the ecumenical movement. They're afraid of what that's going to mean to their own constituency, to their own identity, and so forth. And one of the most profound statements in all six documents is actually, it's a single sentence in that particular document, which says that anti-ecumenical obstructionism is condemned. So here, for the first time, you have all 14 leaders and all 14 groups collectively denouncing that type of behavior.
Professor George Demokopoulos is co-director of the Orthodox Christian Studies Center at Fordham University.